9 o'clock.
It's time for more 92.9 The Game tonight as we get you caught up with all things Atlanta sports and beyond.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back in 92.9 The Game tonight. Get you a little update here on the Atlanta Braves. It is still 3-0. We are in the top of the seventh inning right now. Bryce Elder's still out there working, baby. And this just goes back to why, like, the same question I had, I guess. Like, we knew this was going to be better. So why did we waste three starts with Darius Vines and Allen Winans? I wouldn't even say they were wasted, right? Didn't they win two? I mean, I guess winning two of those three games doesn't necessarily, like, mark the stamp of that. But there we go. So Bryce Elder having a pretty good outing. Been in trouble, but has gotten out of trouble. And it's held the Marlins scoreless as the Braves look to, I don't know, end a losing streak of one game. Is that, doesn't count? Get back on the right side of things? Is that where we're headed? Okay, so there we go. Couple things going on, the NBA playoffs. I was going to talk a little bit more in depth about the NBA playoffs earlier, but I think I'm just going to weave them into a segment that I call OTP.
It's time for Outside the Perimeter on 92.9 The Game tonight.
So quite a few things are popping around, and we're going to get to the NFL in just a moment. But let's go ahead and get you a quick update on what's going on tonight in the association. The Orlando Magic and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Jared Allen's already got 15 points, 14 rebounds. The Cavaliers are doing in Game 2 exactly what they did in Game 1, which is handling business on the inside. The Magic have responded by not shooting well enough to make a difference. And the Cavs right now, early stages of the fourth quarter, are up by 15. And so it feels like this series is headed towards a 2-0 Cleveland edge. But, of course, as things rotate towards Orlando home games, we'll see how that plays out. So far, no road team has won a game yet. But could that change today? Because the Philadelphia 76ers, with Tyrese Maxey having, I don't know, is it a flu game? What's going on there? But he was a little questionable, some illness earlier. But he's having a pretty good game, 20 points and 7 assists. Midway or early stages of the third quarter there, Philly clinging on to a 1-point lead. It is now a 4-point lead. And so we'll keep an eye on that. Joel Embiid is playing, but obviously with the knee thing, I don't know if he's going to be 100% himself this entire playoff run. And then the late game, very interesting game. Denver and hosting the Los Angeles Lakers. Obviously, the Nuggets hold a 1-0 lead, but it was a very competitive game. And the battle between the two big centers, Anthony Davis, Nikola Jokic, it's going to be one something fun to watch because – in my opinion, if the Lakers are going to win this series, Anthony Davis is going to have to find a way to outplay Nikola Jokic. And he was close. They were about even, I would say, on the other night. But he's got to outplay him, not play level with him. And so you've got that there for him. While we're talking NBA, I guess I'll stick with this story. We'll see how quickly I can butcher his name. Zachary Rizache. You familiar with him?
You gotta say it with the French accent.
I'm not gonna put on a French accent.
He is French. Oh. So does you say it with the French accent? Oh. By the way, they're gonna field on that national team this Olympics.
Five centers.
Like legitimately five centers. It's gonna be ridiculous, their front line. How tall it's going to be.
So if you're not familiar, Zachary Rizache is a 6'10", 19-year-old Frenchman. He's officially placed his name to enter the NBA draft. A lot of people believe he's going to follow in the footsteps of Wembanyama and become the first overall pick. Again, 6'10", 19 years old. Here's my concerns. He is playing professionally right now in France. 10.4 points and 3.4 rebounds. Like,
So the story with him is that he had a hot start to the season.
23 minutes per game.
And then he's faded recently. But
and look, I know the NBA is always, like most every sport, drafting on potential. I get that. But I don't know, like when Luka was coming out, like I watched a couple of games when Luka was in Spain because I, at the time, didn't have a job and it was middle of the day on NBA TV and they were showing the Spanish Copa or whatever they called their basketball league. I watched Luka. You're like, yeah, that guy's dropping 40 every time I see him. So I get that. And even with like Wembanyama, it was a slow game here or there, but you could kind of see it. And to be fair, I have not really watched a lot of Reza Shea's game, but 10.4 points, three rebounds, 3.5 rebounds.
It's always with those guys, and I say those guys, not to say, but the when guys are coming from overseas, it's. They play
He's
in the
playing
leagues.
Against men.
Yeah, that's always what they say. It's 19-year-olds, 19-year-olders, 18-year-old kids.
I don't
kids.
Need any defense for this crazy good 19-year-old playing against some unathletic 33-year-old.
I mean, there are moments probably He's when Wimby was overseas where Wimby looked particularly human going
Their
against.
His shoulders are hairy. He doesn't want to rub up against them. He can't get rebounds. Nah, I'm just saying, like, I want to see, and this goes for guys coming out of college too, by the way. Like, we talk about it. I want to see my first overall pick dominate. Like, I want to see us know darn well that's the guy. And I'm just saying, 10 points and 3.5 rebounds ain't it. That's all I'm saying. All right, back to Pigskin. An interesting move in the NFL today. The Jets have traded Zach Wilson to the Broncos for a late-round pick swap, and they're going to pay half of the guaranteed money for this year. I find it interesting because you have to ask the question about why. And for the Broncos, a team that a lot of people have rumored to be moving up in the NFL draft to take a quarterback, why acquire Zach Wilson now? And it feels like they're maybe having doubts about whether they can get up to where they need to get to. And the biggest issue for them, unless they're giving some sort of crazy massive haul, is it's pretty easy to envision Minnesota getting to move up easier. And if I'm a team that Denver's in contact with, I'm going to go back to Minnesota and say, look, Denver says this is what they're giving us. If you want this, if you want J.J. McCarthy, here's what you need to do. And you take Minnesota's 11. You take their 23, and you take their first round next year, and you go to work. Because I don't know to what extent Denver would have to overpay. So is it insurance, or are they just totally off of the idea of taking quarterback? For some reason, do they believe Sean Payton? Is he still quarterback whisperer? We still doing that thing? Does Sean Payton believe that he can resuscitate the career of Zach Wilson?
Hey, if he does that, more power to him. And he truly is that dude.
Let me help you out. He's not gonna.
The best tweet I saw about Zach Wilson was a writer. He's like, oh, no, my mom lives in Denver.
I mean, the interesting thing to me is, like, they already have a ton of Broncos jerseys with Wilson on him. Can he just take that number?
Wouldn't Russell have to, like...
Russell's gone. Who cares what he says?
He'd have to buy that supply, doesn't he?
No,
or does Zach have to buy the supply then of old Russell Wilson jerseys?
Why? They'd be new Zach Wilson jerseys.
Is that what that's what Kirk had to do? Or that Kirk was gonna have to buy out the supply of Kyle Pitts jerseys if he wanted to change his number?
No, he has to buy out Kyle Pitts' supply.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, he has to buy the Kyle Pitts jerseys.
All right, how are you not following this?
He has to buy the supply of Kyle Pitts jerseys.
No, for Zach Wilson, how are you not following? There's already a supply of jerseys with Wilson on it.
No, because those are somebody else's jerseys.
No, that's not how it works.
And besides, too, there's not a whole like slew of Russell Wilson. They changed their jerseys. They have new jerseys, Abe.
Yeah, I saw them. People were not overly, but they have whatever. They have something. I don't know what number. I don't care. I don't even know if he's going to make the team. Because if they draft a quarterback, what do you do with Zach Wilson? You can just cut him, right? I mean, I guess you could put him on the practice squad, and if someone wants to claim him, have at it.
You're not keeping him as a backup?
Well, Jarrett Stidham's your backup. And if you're drafting a rookie quarterback, I mean, not that Jarrett Stidham's that much better than Zach Wilson, but, like, I don't need my rookie quarterback talking about what he's seeing with Zach Wilson. You know what I mean? Like, I would try and find a more veteran quarterback even than Stidham. But we'll see how they play it. Mike Bell talked about this. He's all over it, keeping track of the news. But Scottie Scheffler won again, only to be, in my opinion, outdone by Nelly Korda, who's got 5 wins in a row, including the Chevron Championship this past weekend. It was an LPGA major. So Scottie's red hot. Nelly Korda, obviously, is having a run unlike we've seen in quite a while. I saw this stat that Scottie Scheffler is the number one ranked golfer in the world. And the number two ranked golfer in the world, I believe, is Rory McIlroy. And I saw a stat that said Scottie has a bigger gap between him and Rory McIlroy than McIlroy has between him and number 784 Tiger Woods. I don't know how that's possible. But that's what they told me. And if you didn't see this one, you'll probably find the stories about it. I'm sure it'll be talked about tomorrow. Aaron Boone got ejected 5 pitches into the Yankees game today for something a fan said. And Hunter Wendelstedt came out there. And look, Aaron Boone did complain and argue about one pitch. And after that, Wendelstedt said, no more, that's enough. And what happened is the very next pitch, a fan near the dugout yelled, and Wendelstedt tossed Boone. And then, because they somehow had open mics, he said, I don't care who said it. You're out of here.
I thought I had the audio there for a second.
I could see that, yeah, and then you didn't. And I paused, and now real, it's perfect. I mean, my goodness.
I deleted it from
Zach Wilson out there.
Not even close.
Something like that. Here's the thing about, like, all these umpires. And I know they're trying to, like, stay in power and not give players or managers whatever. But here's what they're doing. All they're doing is speeding up their own retirement. Like, the more we have nonsense like Hunter Wendelstedt today, Angel Hernandez, like we see every time he's behind the plate, the quicker we're just going to try to force the technology into the game. Like, they're costing themselves their own jobs by being blankety-blanks, to be honest. And every time we see a moment like this, we're like, bring on the robots. They don't pay attention to this. Like, Angel Hernandez blows another call, and we're like, enough, man, just bring on the robot. You tested him? You tested him, right? Bring him in. We're good. Yeah, bring him on in. Yeah, it's all good. And again, like today, you can't be throwing out managers for something a fan says. Is Aaron Boone supposed to be responsible for 38,000, 40,000, 42,000 people in attendance? Like, there's no way. It's a complete abuse of authority, lack of awareness. And quite frankly, when it comes to Angel Hernandez and a little less so for Hunter Wendelstedt, I hope it costs these people their jobs. Like, I cannot believe that Angel Hernandez is still making calls. I can't believe the umpires union has so much power that no one can get this guy away from the major leagues. But if it takes robot umpires to do that, then I think we can pretty unanimously say, bring them on. All right, earlier in the show, I caught up with Jim Nagy, the executive director of the Senior Bowl. I want to give you an opportunity to listen back to the conversation we had. We talked about a number of prospects, pretty much every prospect that's been mildly realistically tied to the Atlanta Falcons. And he had almost all of them at the Senior Bowl. So we're going to talk and let you hear back to what Jim Nagy said, including a comment you've got to stick around for about Latu. Something that may make you change your mind about whether you want Latu or Verse. That's coming your way on the other side. It's 92.9 The Game tonight. Abe Gordon here live in the Kia Studios on Sports Radio. 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app. Welcome in. 92.9 The Game tonight. Abe Gordon here live from the Kia Studios. Just a couple segments left tonight, and then we've got the full 3 hours tomorrow, and that's the last time I'll talk to you before the NFL draft. So we've got a lot planned for tomorrow. We still have a lot of conversations to get to, and like I said, just one more show to get to it. Earlier today, I was lucky enough to be joined by Jim Nagy, and if you're not familiar with him, he's the executive director of the Senior Bowl, NFL draft analyst. I know he's been working with ESPN the past couple of years. I'm not sure if he's doing that again this year or not, but certainly is one of the four. He just has seen so many of these draft prospects. And again, he's dealing with it in a practice scenario, a game scenario, where they can really look at things and work on things. Not just what did he run his 40 in, how high can he jump, how far can he jump, how many bench presses. They're really looking at a bunch of different things. And so I do consider Jim Nagy to be one of the foremost experts in draft prospects. And obviously he has so many of them down at the Senior Bowl, and even the ones that he doesn't, he's certainly well aware of their abilities and strengths, weaknesses, all that stuff. So I was able to catch up with Jim Nagy a little bit earlier in the show today in our first hour. I wanted to give you an opportunity to hear that back, including in the second answer, the second question about Latu, something that might make you change your mind about whether he is your go-to at eight or it's someone else. So without further ado, earlier in the show, a little replay with Jim Nagy. I do want to start, however, with the guy that seems most attached to the Falcons. He was not at the Senior Bowl, but I'm sure you know more than plenty about Dallas Turner. What do you see from a prospect like the Alabama pass rusher?
Yeah, obviously seen a lot of Dallas, just being up in Tuscaloosa over the years and watching him. I'll say this, I don't think he's the same level of prospect that Will Anderson was last year. You know, they got one rookie of the year for the Texans this year. But he's a better athlete. When you saw those guys on the same field and on the same tape, Dallas Turner really jumped out. So high-end athlete on tape, and then he goes to the combine and crushes it. And he's pretty good doing all that stuff too. So again, he's more of a speed rusher, really good athlete, more than athletic enough to drop into space. If we're just talking about like former Falcons guys, like much better space athlete dropper than a Vic Beasley would have been, looser athlete. So I think it's going to be him or Leiatu Latu are the two guys in terms of pass rush that would fit there. And I'm sure you're going to bring that name up. But to me, those are the two guys that would be there at eight.
He's number two on the list. Jim Nagy, the Senior Bowl, joining me on the waitfor.com highlight. Yeah, that was the guy I was going to talk to you about. You had him at the Senior Bowl. We've seen him quietly kind of move up and maybe even become a favorite to go to the Falcons today. We'll see how it plays out on Thursday. But, how do you feel about Latu, what he can do at the next level? And should Falcons fans have any concern about his career, his history with the neck?
You know, it's funny, you know. I mean, a lot of times we don't know about – the people outside the NFL don't know much about these guys' medical histories, right? And this one was out there, right? He had to medically disqualify from Washington, and the UCLA docs cleared him, and he played. So I feel like some people really leaned into that. Like they felt like they had insider info on this kid, and, you know, so they were banging him a little bit because of the medical. What are they? They're like, we're not doctors. None of us are doctors, you know. So I will say this. I haven't spoken to an NFL team yet that's failed this kid medically. You know, a lot of teams go on an alphabet scale, like an A, B, C, D, E, F, or A, B, C, D, F. And then, you know, some teams do like a number scale, like a 1 through 5. So, I mean, yeah, I've talked to teams that have him in that C range medically or like in a 3 range medically. But he's been healthy, the last couple of years at UCLA. And I haven't done a more NFL-ready pass rusher coming out in a long time. I mean, I would have to rack my brain on who is as good as this guy in terms of just being technical and really slippery and knowing how to rush and having a plan. And, you know, he's natural at it because you can cut off his first move. You know, you can stymie his second move. And he's one of those guys. He stays alive in a pass rush, and he just strings moves together. And it's hard to find guys like that. So, I mean, it's hard to get double-digit sacks as a rookie. I think we saw Aiden Hutchinson almost do that a couple years ago. Got to, like, 9.5 or something. Maybe he got it. I can't remember. But I could, a year from now, I could easily see Leiatu Latu being the only double-digit sack guy in the league of this rookie class.
Oh, man. You might – I think you've talked me into switching who I wanted eight. I'm not going to lie. Because it might have actually been the guy we're about to bring up. This is a guy from a smaller school that kind of hit it big, started hitting it big there at the Senior Bowl, and then blew up at the NFL draft as well. But Toledo corner Quinyon Mitchell really just seems to have what it takes to be a corner that could pair well with A.J. Terrell. So what did you see from him at his week in Mobile and beyond?
Yeah, Quinyon was probably a guy coming into Mobile, you know, late first, early second round pick, just because people had doubts of the level of competition, right? The MAC has, the Mid-American Conference hasn't produced a first round pick in 7 or 8 years. And so over the course of his career, he's went up against some decent receivers in that league, but not like he faced here. I mean, Ricky Pearsall from Florida and Roman Wilson from Michigan and some really good ones. And he just had a great week. And what you didn't see Quinyon do a lot on Toledo tape was get up and press man. He was mostly an off man zone player at Toledo. And then, you know, he got up here and got in people's faces. And that's where you saw the size and the strength and the physicality really show up. And then he goes to the combine. He runs 4.33. So, you know, he's been in the conversation with Terrion Arnold from Alabama as the top corner. And I think Terrion's going to be a really good pro. I like him a lot. But at a position, a speed-based position, where if you talk to anyone in the league, the speed's most important at corner. And he ran 4.33 and Terrion ran 4.51. That's a big difference. That's almost 2/10. That's significant. So I think that's why you're hearing, you know, Quinyon's probably going to be the first corner taken. And then the last thing is, he's not just like some fast guy, strong guy. He got his hands on a ton of footballs over the last couple of years at Toledo as well. So he can really find and play the football. You'd be getting a playmaker, you know, like this isn't like some projection. You're not drafting some guy that hasn't made a bunch of plays over his career. I mean, this guy's got real playmaking ability.
Jim Nagy, executive director of the Senior Bowl, NFL draft analyst. He's seen so many of these guys close up. He's been scouting them for quite a while as he wraps around who he wants to be making up the rosters of the Senior Bowl. That's why he's such a valuable asset to talk to this time of year. Another name, and again, it's just so many guys the Falcons have been tied to. There is no one specific guy to hammer down for 5 minutes. We're kind of bouncing all over the place here, Jim, but a quarterback that you guys had there at the Senior Bowl, and some people say it might even be a top 10 pick, maybe the pick at 8, former Indiana and Washington quarterback Michael Penix. What did you see from him?
Yeah, similar conversation with Latu, in the sense that everyone knows what Michael's track record is with the durability. So he had some injury stuff at Indiana. There's no getting around that, but he's had two really full healthy seasons at Washington. He's so much fun to watch throw the football in person. I think my first exposure to him was at the Manning camp like 3 or 4 summers ago. And he can really chuck it. I think you're finally starting to hear that come out, that of all these guys is like throwers and especially deep throwers. He's probably the best in this class, and he can win from the pocket. That's really important. I think the piece that got lost in all of it, you know, cause he is such a pocket guy. He's the only quarterback in this class of the top 6 guys that actually tested and did anything really on the testing front. And he ran in the mid 4.5s. The scouts I talked to that were there, he was 4.52 to 4.58, somewhere in that range, which is probably better than what a lot of people thought. So, you know, if you're the Falcons and you've got Kirk Cousins, these guys are all playing. I mean, people are going to knock his age. All these quarterbacks, if they're any good, they're all playing in their mid-30s anyway. So, you know, you have Kirk for a couple of years. You let this guy work under Kirk, and then he's your future. So, you know, Terry Fontenot, that it's his job to look ahead and set the franchise up the best way he can. And if that's a quarterback, you know, I know they've been doing a lot of homework on him. So we'll see. We'll see on Thursday night. It should be interesting.
Jim Nagy continuing to break down the NFL draft with us here on 92.9 The Game tonight. It's Abe Gordon live in the Kia Studios. Want to turn our attention to a little bit further down the draft board here, Jim. And I mean, if we're the luckiest of lucky, maybe one of them still available for the Falcons in the second round. But maybe the next tier of pass rusher, Byron Murphy and Darius Robinson.
Yeah, Murphy's a really good player, man. We had him committed to come play in the Senior Bowl, and then my guy Daniel Jeremiah put out a mock first-round draft right before Senior Bowl week, and he had him as, like, the number 11 player. And I texted him. I said, man, you just got Byron Murphy out of the Senior Bowl. And he was like, man, don't say that. And literally an hour later, his agent called and pulled him from the game. So he's a really good player, and this will – ring true for a lot of people there in the Atlanta market. The guy he reminds me of is Grady Jarrett. Grady Jarrett, I was working for, I believe I was with the Seahawks or the Chiefs at the time. To this day, Grady's one of my favorite players I've ever scouted, and especially for a guy that slid to the fourth or fifth round, wherever he slid to. You know, really powerful, great leverage, quick, active, instinctive, just a really good football player. I would not be shocked if he's the first defensive player off the board on Thursday night. It's going to be him or Quinion or Dallas Turner, Laiatu, all the guys we talked about. One of those guys will go. And then the second guy you asked me, Darius Robinson, is the guy that had a dominant Senior Bowl week. He lined up all over the place like he did at Missouri. And he got to the quarterback from every alignment. So you're talking about a really versatile guy up front that can move around. He's long. He's powerful. And I just love how he's wired. He's a super competitive guy. When you're around him, the more you're around him, the more you like him. Like he is, if I was Terry Fontenot, I'd want him in my locker room. I'd want him on my football field. He's going to fit every team in the league. So again, I think he's more of a late first round pick. But I don't see a guy with his tools, his versatility, his skill set, getting out of the first round. That would surprise me.
Jim Nagy of the Senior Bowl NFL Draft Analyst joining us here on the WadeFord.com hotline. 92.9 The Game tonight. It's Abe Gordon here. And, Jim, just two more names I want to ask you about. Certainly people here in Atlanta are very familiar with a receiver up in Athens, Ladd McConkey. What do you see him projecting as when he does reach the NFL? This is a guy people are, again, kind of like really hoping that in some way he falls to 43 and the Atlanta Falcons could grab him. I don't see that happening, even in a very receiver-rich class. He just feels like he's ready to go and perform at the next level as well.
Yeah, you're right. I don't see it either, and he is ready to go. He was our second-rated receiver, even going back to last summer. So off the junior tape over the summer, going into the fall, we had Roma Dunsey from Washington 1 and Ladd McConkey 2. I think he's an NFL ready-made guy. He's quick, he's fast, he gets open, can really separate, good after the catch. I mean, there's really not a lot of holes in his game. He's mature, off the charts. He would be a huge fan favorite in Atlanta, I would think. Be a great fit. I, whatever the trade scenarios are, you could end up with him. I don't think you could sit there and wait in the 40s and still get him. He's had too good of a process. He's too good of a prospect. He's too clean. Somebody's going to snatch him up. I could see him going late in the first round.
And then final name for you, Jim, is a guy that a lot of people thought years ago maybe would be the first overall pick in the NFL draft. Not everything goes the way it's planned. But Spencer Rattler is a guy that even a couple weeks ago looked like people were saying, oh, could you get him in the fifth? Could you get him in the fourth? He has started to really climb up mock drafts and up the boards. So what do you know about Spencer Rattler, both from his time there in college and then as he's progressed towards the NFL draft?
Yeah, he's going to be the seventh guy to go. Everyone's talking about the top six guys. Spencer or Michael Pratt from Tulane will be the seventh guy. They're 7 and 8 for everybody, depending on which team you talk to. Those are the two guys that will go next, probably somewhere in the second or third round. I don't think either gets out of day two. I think they end up going somewhere on day two. But I think Spencer, really natural thrower of the football, played a lot, experienced a lot, battled through some adversity leaving Oklahoma, which, teams love that. This guy's shown some mental toughness to bounce back. I mean, I think that's what we're seeing a lot of NFL quarterbacks struggle with right now. Some of these guys that aren't panning out, it's because they're facing adversity for the first time in their life and they don't know how to deal with it. Spencer is proven that he knows how to deal with it. And a lot's been made that he didn't play with a great supporting cast in Columbia this year, especially up front. Xavier Leggett, he had a great guy to throw to, but he didn't have a lot of protection. I think it ended up helping Spencer, at least in my mind. Like I questioned how athletic he was and the mobility, and he moved around and got out of harm's way and created more, on the move than he ever has. And I think that's helped him, and then he came down here, had a great week, probably the most consistent week of any of our quarterbacks, which included, Penix and Nix. And then he played great in the game. He was the game MVP. So I don't think any team's going to draft him to start next year. But if we're, 3 or 4 years from now, like we did with the Dak Prescott, went in the fourth round, if we're looking at a guy from this draft class that you could hit on a starter, not necessarily taking the first round, I would put my money on Spencer Rattler.
It is Jim Nagy, executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl. A final question, Jim. You could take it wherever you want to. Who is one guy that played for you there at the Senior Bowl that you think people are vastly underrating, and no matter where he gets picked, whether it's second round or even in the fourth round, fifth round, is a guy that you think is just destined for an 8 to 10 year NFL career?
Well, shoot, that's a long, long list. I mean, since we're on the air in Atlanta now, I'll keep it with a Bulldog. I think both Georgia's safeties, Javon Bullard and Tyke Smith, did a great job here. You know, and I'll talk about Tyke because, I mean, his thing was he played nickel there at Georgia. You didn't see him play from depth a lot. You know, like he's going to project more as a safety and a nickel. And he was able to do that here in Mobile, and he looked really good back there playing from depth and in man coverage, which you didn't see a lot at Georgia. And then he ran fast. I mean, a lot of teams thought he was going to be a low 4.6 guy, and he goes to the combine and runs 4.47, so 4.46. So he's helped himself a ton in the process. Again, I love how that guy is wired. He's all about football. He's all about competing. You know, I think when we were putting the roster together back in November, most teams had Tyke in the fifth or sixth round. And again, I think he probably goes in the third. So if you're a Power 5 level player and you jump, you know, two or three rounds in the draft process, that's massive. That usually happens with like small school players. So Tyke's had a really good, really good last few months.
Appreciate Jim Nagy joining me earlier in the program. I wanted to replay that for you. And I'll tell you what, the comment he had about Latu is something that makes me reconsider what I want to happen atop the NFL draft. Again, if you missed it, it was the early stage of the interview, but he essentially said he hasn't seen an NFL-ready pass rusher the way Latu is in a number of years. So just something to keep an eye on. Something tells me you might hear that soundbite tomorrow with Carl Dukes. Just a little guess.
Did you say Latu?
Latu.
Latu.
My endless love. Yeah, I know. But
I think I might switch it up and play Careless Whisper tomorrow.
Okay.
The sax kind of gives it that, you know, that sexy sax.
It's romance, baby.
It is.
The rom-com central between Carl Dukes and Latu. All right, when we come back, we're going to wrap it up here. A preview tomorrow's show, because it's still got a couple of things going down in football land, in Falcon land, I want to talk to you about. We're going to do that on the other side. 92.9 The Game tonight here on Sports Radio. 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app. Welcome back. Final couple of minutes here on 92.9 The Game tonight. Let's go ahead and get this out of the way. The Atlanta Braves have taken care of business. Second shutout of the year, we believe. Just a quick little – this is a song from the movie Snatch, by the way. Well, it's my favorite movie of all time, and I just had the soundtrack in my head. And so anytime a song from the movie pops up, I will guarantee you, that's in the Snatch soundtrack. I actually went and saw a Guy Ritchie film today. The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. Henry Cavill, Alan Ritchson.
How was it?
Isa Gonzalez. It was enjoyable. 2 hours, in and out. All right, I know I'm supposed to talk sports. The Braves won. Okay, Travis d'Arnaud hit a home run. Bryce Elder had a pretty good start. 6 2/3, I believe. In and out of trouble, blah, blah, blah. Okay, enough about the Braves. I forgot what I was going to say. Oh! Movie theaters, I'm getting so tired of movie theaters not starting the trailers on time. It is every single time I go. And look, I'd be fine with no trailers, no previews. Like, it's all on YouTube now anyways. You're not going to show me a preview I haven't seen before. And yeah, I go to a lot of movies, so maybe I first saw a trailer there. But, like, I don't need previews or trailers at all, right? And I certainly don't need you showing the last, no offense to Maria Menounos, I don't need to see her 10 minutes after my movie should have started, okay? I don't need to see Nicole Kidman welcoming you back to theaters. Like, dude, if my movie's supposed to start at 1:15, if you got to get through 15 or 20 minutes of trailers, fine. My movie started today at 1:40. I went to a 1:15 showing, and my movie started at 1:40. What is that? But here's the problem. I can't presume every time it's going to be that late and show up 30 minutes late for every movie, right? Because what if they start on time? And what if there's only 10 minutes of trailers? Now I've missed 15 minutes of the film. They got to figure that out. I am team done with trailers. I might have to break this down on one of my future shows. I don't have time for it tomorrow. I got too much Falcons discussion that's going to be had. But I might have to break. Are people still interested in trailers before movies? We might have that discussion.
It's tough because of...
Everyone sees it on YouTube.
Yeah.
Like, you've seen it before.
Now, I think the appeal of the trailers now is sometimes seeing it on a big screen. Sometimes people enjoy that. I got a couple friends who legit will not... They will avoid any and every spoiler possible when it comes to trailers just so they can see the trailer fresh for the first time. So, there are those people.
I'd rather see the movie fresh and not the trailer. Like, that's my thing. I already know the movies I'm, like, 100% going to see. I don't need a trailer. I don't even... Deadpool and Wolverine? I don't need to see a trailer.
Oh, what a great trailer that was today.
Fine. Great. I've seen three different trailers for it now.
Today's was awesome, though.
Sure.
Well, today you saw...
Don't need to see any of them.
You saw the bad... You saw who the bad person was. You saw the big bad, and you kind of got an idea of where the plot is.
Couldn't care less. I was going to go see it. I don't need to see it now. That's my point. Anyways. All right. So we got a lot to get to. I am back with you guys tomorrow night, and we're going to do a couple things. I got one scenario that I have not heard discussed in regards to the Atlanta Falcons draft. We're going to bring that up and break it down. We're going to do that tomorrow night. I've also been talking about this a little bit. Like, worst case scenario, what do you need to get out of this draft? Like, it'd be great if you pull out of seven rounds, you pull out five future Pro Bowlers and two All-Pros. Like obviously, that'd be good. What's, like, the bare minimum that we can get out of this draft? We're going to talk about that. And then we're also going to jump around the entire division. I got a buddy in Tampa Bay, Tom Krasnicki. He's going to join me and talk about the Buccaneers. Not just their draft, but the offseason they had, hiring a new coach, where they're headed, all that stuff. I got a buddy in Carolina, Willie P. They hired a new coach. Did I say the Bucs hired a new coach? They definitely didn't, but they brought back Baker Mayfield. The Carolina Panthers hired a new coach from the Buccaneers. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the decision to trade Brian Burns, where that team is headed, Bryce Young, and then certainly what they're going to look to do in the NFL draft. And we're also going to go out to New Orleans and chat about, and I have no idea what the Saints are doing. I don't know what their plan is. Are they floating in no man's land? Are they trying to break it down? Are they trying to build forward? We're going to talk about that as well. So I've got a guest representing each of the other three teams in the NFC South. We're going to bounce around. And then certainly, like I said, we are going to dive front in from the Atlanta Falcons perspective as well. Certainly got some good categories for the PM Power rankings tomorrow. I already filled out one list. You gave me two lists. You gave me foods that are better when made at home, homemade dishes. And you gave me top championship teams, and only one of them could be a local squad. And so I go ahead, and I really speed ran that one. I did it in the break after. Like, I had five ready to go. The homemade foods is going to be a little bit different. By the way, if you missed tonight's Power Rankings list, it is a good one. Two of the better topics, not just individually, but like a combo topic of good sports topic, good non-sports topic that Orin gave me. I put it up on Twitter, at Abe Gordon, if you want to check that out. And I do want you guys to send me some of your thoughts for the non-sports topic. The non-sports topic was top five brands of flavored booze. And my top brand was Crown Peach. You got Crown Apple or Jim Apple, Jim Beam, Apple II. Screwball, Fireball, and then... again, shout out to my favorite bartender, Alicia. Cinnamon apple vodka. It was so good in a delicious holiday mule. But hey, if you've got other flavored booze that I should be trying, holler at me. Let me know what's up. Now, most of this stuff I just drink straight. Like, we talked about it. I got three bottles at home of Crown Peach, although I think I'm going to give one to new neighbors. I think that's like a nice thing to do, like a little gift. They don't need to know that I've got two other bottles that were gifted to me, and I'm just – I mean, I feel bad Am I re-gifting? Probably not. Like, I've at some of the bottles of Crown Peach I've acquired are gifts, and some I bought myself. There was a time when Crown Peach was supposedly hard to come by, and every time I went to the liquor store, I'd just buy another two bottles, and they were, like, never short of it. And so now I just stocked up. I had, like, eight bottles of Crown Peach, and I'm working my way through it. Don't worry about that. But I do like to drink some of the flavored liquors, Crown Peach and Crown Apple most notably. But if you have a favorite flavored brand of booze, feel free to shoot me a tweet at Abe Gordon. So the Atlanta Braves get it done. And look, here's the discussion moving forward. It's going to be Bryce Elder. And it's kind of twofold. You know, we asked the question, if you want to just like go ahead and move past it, I understand that too. But like, why wasn't he up here sooner? And we had to sit through three starts of Allen Wynans and a back-to-back efforts from Darius Fiennes. That just didn't need to happen. It didn't. And so, Elder, with a very good outing. Again, a Braves second shutout of the season. Elder goes 6 2/3. He was in trouble a lot, but as we've seen Elder do, double play balls, fly balls that are not sacrifice flies, and he's able to escape pressure for mostly the entirety of the game. So, a good outing from him. A couple things in the NBA. The Cavaliers have closed it out at home, a 10-point victory over the Magic. 86 points for the Magic. And for as much as we talk about the Pacers and the Hawks and offense in the NBA, we're seeing a lot more low-scoring games in the NBA playoffs. And so maybe something to keep a mindset on while the Atlanta Hawks attempt to rebuild. We've got a game with 4 minutes left between the Knicks and 76ers. It's a 2-point game with the Knicks holding a lead. They're in the mid-90s, low 90s. The winner of that game is not going to have 110. I mean, unless it goes to overtime. And so just maybe something to keep an eye on when you try and build the Atlanta Hawks. This is how you win playoff basketball. I mean, you go back to the games yesterday, the losing teams. The Heat had 94. The Mavericks had 97. The Pacers had 94. The Pelicans had 92. Guys, you lose game one of the playoffs, you're in the 90s. That's defense. You're not going to outscore everyone. Yeah. The Indiana Pacers, who the best offense in the NBA, held to 94 points. And so, you know, try and figure out where the Hawks want to go. Maybe start there. Maybe start figuring out how you win in the playoffs and then hope it relates to the regular season. That's the same thing we're asking of the Atlanta Falcons, isn't it? Like, this Falcons team right now can win in the regular season. They can win the division. I'm not looking for them to win the division. I'm looking for them to buoy themselves in the NFL draft to win in the playoffs. And how do you do that? You got to have a defense that travels along with the offense. We saw offense-first teams in the NFL this year. It did not go well come playoff time. Now, you could have a good offense and have a good defense and you could succeed, right? That's what the Ravens did. That's what the Niners did. But you got to have that defense. And so that's got to be the focus of the Atlanta Falcons come the NFL draft. We're going to have more on that tomorrow. Again, I got 3 hours left with you guys tomorrow night. And that's my last show before the NFL draft. So I got some interesting stuff for you. Again, we're going to bounce around the NFC South, see what every other team is thinking as well, and a couple of topics in regards to pick number 8. That's your way tomorrow right here on 92.9 The Game. For Big O, Oren, hooking it up tonight, playing the tunes, rocking out with me. I'm Abe Gordon, live from the Kia Studios. Thank you for joining me here on a Monday evening on Sports Radio. 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app.